All right, I'd say you made your point. Now, could you let go Armani wrinkles?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 3, Moving Violations. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for bearing with us. The unexpected change to the schedule last week. Sometimes life happens or stops happening. R.I.P. Mabel. But we appreciate your forbearance. Coming up on Again With This, episode 89, Were We Ever So Young? That drops March 25th, and we'll be watching Rob Estes in 21 Jump Street, season 4, episode 2, Say It Ain't So, Pete.
Great title.
Yeah, well, I mean, only slightly worse than the Melrose titles recent vintage. Anyway, that is on peacocktv.com if you are a subscriber. And we hope that you will join us at patreon.com/againwiththis, where we will be talking about it and 88 other things. You should check it out.
Yeah. Let's get into this episode, shall we?
Yes.
Starting with our B plot. Richard pulls his last dick move. Thank you so much. We rejoin Richard, Jane, and Sydney where we left them, graveside. Richard is just pacing while Jane and Sydney dig a hole. Like, bring an audiobook or something. I realize this is before podcasts, but, like, gonna get bored. Anyway.
Do some sit-ups, something.
He's got a gun and notes that the faster they dig, the faster they die. Jane mutters that she should have brought her gun, like, yeah, wasn't the plan to kill the blackmailer? What were they going to do it with? I completely lost the thread. When they showed him with the gun, I thought he got it from her. So I don't know why they included that line.
Yeah, I thought the same.
Anyway, Sydney thinks she should have let Jane confess. Jane stupidly asks what Richard's plan is, and Sydney says it's obvious because it is. He's going to kill them, bury them in this hole, take the money, and leave L.A. Being dead means all his debts are canceled. But then Sydney gets an idea. Clip two.
You know, it's always been kind of a dream of mine, too. Blow in L.A. with a bankroll. Aren't you going to be lonely?
What are you trying to pull, Sydney?
You know, it was Jane's idea murdering you. She blackmailed me into being an accomplice. I've always been more of a lover than a killer.
Is that right?
Sydney. If you don't shut up, Richard's not going to have to kill you because I'm going to strangle you to death.
Oh, you're just jealous because all of your lovers end up having a thing for
you
me.
You are pathetic.
Oh, it's true.
Michael,
it's
Chris, Jake. Yes, it's up. It's totally not. It's totally
enough.
Totally.
Enough. Stop fighting.
All right. Okay. Okay. I will do anything that you say. You just answer me one question. You have to be honest. Who do you think is more attractive? Me or my wimpy sister, Jane? And from what I hear, Jane is even more of a wimp than that. You know, come to think of it, Jane, maybe that's why the guy had to take what he wanted.
All right.
You really tried to hit me.
Just run, you idiot.
I mean, the fact that it devolves into Richard being like, stop fighting, like he's their dad, is very funny.
I know. The actresses do a good job selling that, you know, we're just barely supposed to think that this isn't a real fight because it totally still could be with these two.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's like four seasons worth of setup that ended in this somewhat lame payoff that only works because Richard is a bonehead, but yes. I'll take it.
Yeah. The only thing that saves that from being a perfect moment is Sydney having to throw in, no wonder he had to take what he wanted, which is like, gross. We all know what happened. Don't remind us. I mean, I know
this gross.
Is top of the episode resetting, but still.
Yeah.
So when we see them again, it's daylight. And as they walk through the woods, Jane pouts that Sydney really would have run off with Richard to save herself. And Sydney, rightly annoyed, says she risked her life to create that very effective distraction and also risked her money and potentially her physical freedom if they go to prison. And Jane snits that if they ever get out of the woods, she'll spend the rest of her life paying Sydney back. And then they hear something in the brush, and when it's followed by a male voice, they immediately take off running, but it's a sheriff's deputy who very quickly waves off their talk of a man pursuing them to say they're safe now. And later, the deputy, whose name is Tom, drives them back to Jane's car, where she sees that Richard slashed her tires. Sydney hopefully asks Tom if knowing that Richard has both a knife and a gun means that Rangers will shoot to kill. And Richard was driving a red Corvette, which should be easy to spot, which turns out to be true, thank God. So then, after night has fallen, Tom's driving Sydney and Jane somewhere that Samantha can pick them up. Jane freaks out because they are about to pass the Halfway House Cafe, and you know that's where Chris works. Just kidding. Because Richard's car's out front. But Halfway House Cafe, welcome back.
Mm-hmm. Chris. Hey, buddy.
So then they see Richard himself walking out. Tom tells Sydney and Jane to hide in the car, and he goes to try to arrest Richard. Richard, of course, ignores Tom and keeps his eyes on Jane and Sydney in the car, very badly hiding, as we hear this, clip 3.
I don't know what these two told you, but I'll bet you they didn't tell you everything. Did you, Jane?
You raped me. What more does he need to know?
All I'm asking for is a chance to tell my side of the story.
Sorry I'm late. You wouldn't believe the traffic. Tom, look out. He's got a gun.
Oh, boy. I love... Yeah.
Can I tell you what I heard the first time that clip played?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what these two told you, but I'll bet you they didn't tell you everything. Did you, Jane?
You raped me. What more does he need to know?
All I'm asking for is a chance to tell my side of the story.
Here comes the clown.
Penny Foolish, is it?
The especially funny thing about that is that Samantha just continues to careen through her life, like totally oblivious to everything going on. Like in the first two episodes of this season, they really were, as we discussed, trying to make it seem like it was possible that Samantha was somehow in on something with Richard because she kept being around like the jacket and the shovel. And, you know, she was living with Jane when he snuck in and put all the dirt in her bed. But this clip, God. Just the sound of her voice, you can tell, like, she's just some dizzy broad. Have yep. No idea about life.
Just a pawn in the Melrose chess game.
It's so true. Anyway, in mid all of those gunshots that we heard, Tom ends up fatally shooting Richard and is a lot more upset about it than the rest of us, I would say. You can see his aghast face in the visual aids. The next morning, the sheriff finishes up his paperwork and sends the gals back to L.A. But before they leave, Jane wants to see Richard's body. And honestly, who could blame her? You know what? Fair.
Not me.
Yeah. This time, Richard is really most sincerely dead because Tom is better at his job than Jane is at checking a dang pulse. But Jane then pushes her luck by asking the sheriff for a moment alone with the corpse, even though by now they all know Richard raped her and therefore can't be sure she's not about to mutilate his body or something, but the sheriff allows it. And Samantha, also in the room for some reason, says this, clip 4.
I've never seen a dead body before. You get used to it.
Yeah, you're on a nighttime soap now, girl.
Show never change. Love you so much.
So good.
Sydney's ready to leave, but Jane wants to know if either of them has a safety pin. They don't, but Samantha has an antique Egyptian brooch on her jacket, which Jane then contaminates by using the pin to stick Richard's dead body and confirm that it does not awaken him. And Samantha continues to regret throwing her lot in with this seeming psycho. And if it seems like a strange level of detail to describe the pin, it's not. It's another installment from our friends at the Gala Committee. Here is what they write about it. The script called for Jane to stab Richard's corpse with a brooch, confirming that LA's answer to Rasputin was indeed deceased. Conceptually, Gala had infected Melrose Place with ideas, much the same way a virus infects a cell. As the relationship between art and primetime television grew, Gala was granted access to the show's scripts as they were being written. The arrangement was made initially to give the artists enough lead time to identify upcoming scenes that might lend themselves to infection. What began as an exercise in logistics resulted in several direct collaborations between the writers and the artists. Galley began to influence storylines and contributed to the show's dialogue. In this particular instance, the script called for Jane to stab Richard's corpse with a brooch. Alluding to this construct, the artists proposed the mosquito brooch, a reference to the yellow fever virus, an infectious disease on the CDC's list of viruses most likely to make an epidemic resurgence in the next 20 years. Yellow fever is spread by the Aedes aegypti mosquito. Remember when Sam volunteered her grandmother's antique Egyptian brooch so Jane could poke Richard's corpse? It's because Galla asked the writers to include the Egyptian line in order to make the brooch's meaning apparent. Later that night, on a Melrose Place chat room, fans picked up on the deliberate reference and speculated that it was a hidden message. Interesting.
Okay.
And you can see the pin in the visual aids. It's you can't totally tell it's a mosquito, but it is cool looking.
Yeah. And by the way, this morgue that they're in is like, I love how prop masters just like, any science-y room,
yeah.
There have to be bottles of colored liquid that it's like, what are they doing in this morgue? Dying mm-hmm. Easter eggs? It's just like the craziest colors. Like what I don't know about embalming fluid is a lot, but I mean, that's really blue. That's like tidy bowl. Don't know what's happening? Don't need to.
Sarah, what you don't know about morgues is they always have Barbicide. So.
I mean, they should. Better safe.
So on the drive back, Samantha asks Jane why she stabbed Richard with Samantha's family heirloom, which, like, if not for the Gala Committee stuff, we now know you would think Samantha would be like, I also have a pen. But anyway, Jane saying that Richard could have been faking it again does not comfort Samantha, nor does the appearance behind them of a cop car with its siren on and the panic it induces in her passengers. Clip 5.
Okay. I told you we were never going to get away with this. They're going to read us our rights, cuff us, and we are going to end up like the Menendez brothers, cellmates for life.
All right. There's no reason to panic.
Get away with what? What did you guys do?
Step on the gas. Maybe we can outrun them, make it across the border.
Hold.
What are you doing?
I want you both out of my car right now.
First smart thing she's done, and the last for a while, but we'll get into it.
I mean, she can order whatever she wants, but, you know, when a cop is coming, you stay in the car because otherwise they get mad at you. You're not supposed to get out when you're pulled over, Samantha. But it's the sheriff they just spent the night and morning dealing with, and he's got a bag from Richard's trunk monogrammed with Jane's initials, Brilliant Jane, and containing $50,000 in cash. Clip 6.
Don't you want to open it, see if anything's missing?
Oh, no. I mean, if Richard stole anything from me, what difference does it make now?
Well, $50,000 is a lot of cash to be carrying around. I'm sure it'd make a big difference to a lot of honest folk.
It's our money, Sheriff, if that's what you're implying.
Hey, I wasn't asking. It's just that I got a dead body back at the office and a park ranger that can't stop shaking because he's never killed a man before. And a couple of young ladies with a bag full of money. Makes you wonder.
Are we under arrest?
No, I'm going to let you go, but stay out of my jurisdiction. I never want to see you again.
I mean, speaking of jurisdiction, like, why is he dealing with the park rangers? We were told Tom was National Parks. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Like, this plot line is over now, and I don't care.
Yes.
That much. But it's also funny to me that it's the LA County Sheriff of LA County. So, but whenever LA County Sheriffs are on this show, it's like they're in the absolute sticks, like the middle of Nevada, like country, like accents and everything. Like, guys, you can climb up a hill and see LA County from LA.
Well, I don't think he's supposed to be an LA County sheriff. He's like, because if they're on the other side of the Halfway House Cafe, they're far. Like they're up north somewhere.
Oh, I thought he was LA County sheriff.
No, but still. I also Yeah.
Then it's Sacramento. Like, what are you?
Whatever. Yeah.
Who cares?
I also went back and forth on identifying this guy. I mean, you heard me say he's a sheriff's deputy because I thought he was, because as soon as he pulled a gun, I was like, well, I guess he's not a park ranger. Like, park rangers don't have guns, do they?
Yeah, no, they don't. And actually, this plot line would have been improved 125% if he had sprayed Richard to death with bear spray, but we work with what we have.
Yeah. Anywho, when we catch back up with these idiots, Jane is waking up to the sound of very loud zippers and goes out to the living room to see Samantha hurriedly packing. This is also where we see that Jane has been sleeping with her bedroom door wide open, which, weird choice when you have a roommate sleeping in a room without a door. But anyway, for some reason, Jane is surprised to learn that Samantha no longer wants to live with someone who attempted murdered someone. And Jane promises that the crazy era of her life is over, but Samantha's having nightmares and wants to get as far away from Jane and Sydney as she can. Jane asks Samantha for one more chance because she likes Samantha's company in a one-bedroom apartment. For some reason, Samantha agrees to give Jane a chance to be more normal, but she's not unpacking her suitcase yet. And I feel like under other circumstances, or if this show aired even 10 years later, Samantha would be like, oh, okay, this lady's trying to fuck me. Because otherwise, like, why would she be so anxious to keep Samantha around?
Seriously. Plus, an apartment is opening up.
An apartment is
opening
up.
Even on this show, this contrivance is not necessary. But anyway.
That's right. So then Jane runs into Jake in the courtyard, and we all have to remember how much their plot line was compressed so that the writers could push Jake and Allison together. Clip 7.
I heard about what happened. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. But it's over now, and Richard can't hurt me anymore.
Why didn't you say something? If he was stalking you, I could...
I was trying to protect you. Like I said, it's over.
Jane... Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm helping Allison move.
Oh, I heard you were deserting us. I'm sorry to see you go.
Yeah, I'm sorry for all you've been through. I wish I could have been there for you.
I know. Allison, I owe you an apology. In fact, I owe you both one.
Forget it.
No. You reached out to me and I pushed you away. But I learned a hard lesson. Secrets only get you into more trouble.
Hear that,
what does
Jake
that mean?
And Allison?
I don't get it.
We'll get to Allison's big move in the A plot. But the other funny thing about this is Jake is like, I heard what happened when that guy who raped you got killed in front of you. And Jane is just like beaming, huge smile, no problem. Like the only person on the show who ever has any post-traumatic stress about anything is Kimberly. And everyone else is just like, keep it moving.
I mean, I kind of can't blame them. Because sometimes the writers just like, for various logistical reasons that like we understand how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tasty, sometimes it's nasty, but it's like we get to the end of these plot lines and I'm like, do I necessarily want to be dealing with ongoing trauma and recovery involving these situations and their real life counterparts?
No,
I don't.
No, ma'am. So later, at the store by the Fitz, Jane and Sydney divide their cash back up again. Jane bitching about how much she has to pay on Richard's past due accounts. And she's on her way out to go deal with that when Samantha reminds Jane that she has not received a paycheck yet. Which, okay, at a certain point, we have to say, sometimes we bring heartache on ourselves, Sam. Like,
yes,
don't
we do.
Let Jane dismiss you with this shit. Clip 8.
But with the folding of Mancini Heart, I've had a lot of unexpected expenses, and I promise.
Come on. I saw that bag full of money.
Bags of cash just don't go as far as they used to, do they?
I'll tell you what, why don't I pay your share of the rent for the next couple months, and then we'll just call it even.
Jane, I'm sorry. I mean, I know that you're going through a lot, but if I don't get a paycheck by the end of the week, I'm gonna have to start looking for another job.
I will take these, and if you would just charge them to my account and have them delivered. Thank you. Au revoir.
Sid.
Yes?
Don't make me beg.
Thought had crossed my mind. But I guess I could spare a few bucks for the hired help.
Thanks. I owe you.
Mm-hmm. 8% per annum. Oh, Jane.
Jane, you didn't think I was just going to give you the money, did you? Blood only goes so far.
Per annum? Come on.
Yeah, what?
Sid, you can do better than that. 50% a week. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah.
Jane.
I mean, Richard may have debts, but he also has assets. And she's going to get something, but whatever. Clearly, bad stuff is happening in this business. Samantha, get out. Like, start looking for another job. You should have been started looking for another job.
Oh, my God.
But,
plus which, like, they're crumpled up bills that have been, like, adrenaline sweated and bled on. Like, no. Yeah.
Anyway. Samantha does not get out, spoiler, and from here they cross over with the A-plot, so we will see more of them later. Speaking of the A-plot, we're here! When we're not back in court again, some tenants leave and others arrive. Peter is doing push-ups in his cell, ignoring the guard, telling him that his sexy wife is waiting for him. Peter will see her in court. The guard tells Amanda, who's just hanging out in a hallway, like, right outside the door. Again, the loosest security ever in this jail. The guard tells her Peter doesn't want to see her. Michael is also there, and when Amanda repeats Peter's threat to kill someone if he didn't get out of jail, Michael tells her she did everything she could, which, like, did we see her do anything? I mean, she married him. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
This is also the scene where we see the debut of her new weird bangs, where, like, they're combed in the front and then swept across behind with, like, a hard bang line in the middle.
And half the cast has them, and I complained about it in the visual aids in at least two episodes of recent vintage. Like, this was just the time, was that, like, vintage sort of bump flip thing that, like, even Katie Couric was trying it at this point. And she had like short soccer mom hair.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Plenty of bad pictures of this in the visual aids for you to marvel at in confusion.
Yeah.
Apparently, Amanda and Michael did not arrive together because she asks what he's even doing there, and he claims to be concerned about Peter. Amanda guesses he actually plans to get Peter to ask Amanda to back off Kimberly. Amanda then shoves Michael against the wall, which by the transitive property means she could also shove that gigantic orderly from the premiere around, which she probably could.
Excellent point.
She expresses her resolve to stay on Kimberly until she alibis Peter. Speaking of whom, Kimberly finds Michael at the hospital later to reset the plotline for new viewers. She can't testify at Peter's hearing because of her memory loss. Michael suggests that they just rehearse her testimony, but Kimberly thinks that will actually hurt Peter's case, and I give the writers credit for not making this into something where suddenly Kimberly, ethics queen, has a problem with perjury.
Right.
But then Michael spots Matt and shoves him into an exam room to yell at him about writing fake prescriptions to himself under Michael's name and declare that he's calling the cops on him, also confiscating the bottle out of Matt's locker. And Matt babbles that he just needed to get through midterms. He will totally get rid of the pills now himself. But if there's anything Michael knows, it's shady behavior. And he states that he obviously does not trust Matt to do that. Matt begs Michael not to report him and thereby end his medical career. And Michael reluctantly agrees, but warns Matt to clean up his act.
He does not specifically mention the self-tanner in which Doug Savant has been doused, making him look like a very sweaty pecan, but he should have. It's not great. His hair looks good, though, finally.
His hair is good, it's true.
Yep.
When Amanda comes home, Taylor and Kyle are waiting on her doorstep, and Amanda seems confused as to why Kyle made a special trip to introduce himself to her and ignores his proffered hand, telling them when moving hours are, and Taylor casually asks how Amanda's husband is, to which Amanda just tells her to watch out for her nose before slamming the door in her face.
That was a good line.
It was.
Love it.
Kyle is surprised that Taylor isn't going to wreck Amanda for that, and when Taylor shrugs him off, he grabs her arm, and says there's something she isn't telling him, but she just didn't want to antagonize Amanda this early in their acquaintance, she claims. Downstairs, Allison and Jake are making out in her packed-up apartment and excitedly anticipating all the fucking they're going to do all over her new place when they hear a knock at the door, which I didn't notice was open until I saw Sarah's visual aids. It's like, yeah, open a
totally
crack.
Totally open. Like, guys, you are on a soap opera.
Yeah.
Lock it. Throw the bolts.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Anyway, They hear the courtesy knock on this open door and have barely sprung apart before Billy lets himself in and sees how guilty they both look. Billy wanted to offer help to help pack, and Jake sells out Allison by leaving her alone with Billy. But not until after he's declined Billy's invitation to a USC football game. Nothing suspect about that. And once he's gone, Billy notices a shirt on a pile of junk that Allison's getting rid of and decides to be annoying about it. Clip 9.
You're not thinking of throwing this away, are you?
Yeah, well, actually...
I wore this the year we won the league, all right? So I think you should keep it.
No, no, you keep it.
I wouldn't have given it to you if I didn't want you to have it.
Fine.
So where do you want me to start?
Oh, I really want to do this on my own.
Allison, you gotta let me do something, okay? I mean, you know, maybe tomorrow I go down to the post office and file your change of address form, or, you know, if you need to rent a truck for the move.
Oh, I do need a truck.
Yeah, say no more.
Billy.
No. No, come on, I can handle it. Don't worry. Yeah, I want to do whatever I can to support you in this move. That's what I tend to do. So I'll go make the call.
Okay. The problem here is Andrew, as usual, Andrew Hsu is bad at acting. So
yes,
he has read ahead and he knows that Jake and Allison are fucking. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're supposed to think that Billy knows or even suspects that anything is going on. But Andrew Hsu is playing it like he's just setting up situations for to try and trap them or like find them out.
Yeah. Or to let them dig a hole even deeper by having an opportunity to tell him and not telling him.
Yes.
That's absolutely the problem, is that once you get to the spoiler, I guess, big quote reveal.
Yeah.
He has nowhere to go anyway because he's not good at this. But
right.
He, like anyone would have nowhere to go because he's been playing it the whole time like he's fucking with them.
Yes.
Which I think maybe they should have. Looking at dailies, just like rewritten it so that would be true. And he was just being an utter twat about
yes,
it, which
yes.
Like, okay, that's entertaining. I don't want to hang out with the guy, but okay. Right.
And it would also be credible because people in a new relationship would be so self-involved, even though they're going through all these contortions to like keep Billy from finding out. They also might not notice the change in his behavior because they're so into each other. But
and they're also being extremely obvious. So just on a general level, Hsu's acting aside, it's not credible that anyone who is not on a soap would not figure out that they were boning down. But
yes,
this has to drag on for a while longer. So yay.
Yes. And in the meantime, we get to hear him sounding extremely put upon about doing all these favors. No one asked him to do. Like, if you're volunteering to do this stuff, stop sounding so mad about it.
Yeah. Well, and also just stop volunteering to do this stuff because it's obvious what you think it's supposed to do and she's not into it.
Right.
Hint, take it.
Yeah. Over to someone who was asked to do something she didn't want to do. At some point while she was off screen, Kimberly was apparently convinced to testify and we rejoin her while she was doing so, looking terrified. The story now, as recapped by the prosecutor, is that Kimberly recently returned to the restaurant with Michael and Amanda, and now Kimberly remembers having dined there with Peter. And looking shifty as hell, Kimberly takes a long pause and then says, "That's right." But their waiter does not remember Peter. And the prosecutor says straight out that Kimberly does not remember the night in question, and Kimberly tearfully admits that she doesn't. Clip 10.
Look, before you say anything...
Your wife is dead.
Wow. That's the compassionate both sides of Amanda we love.
She really does look like she's planning to murder Kimberly before she leaves the stand, as you can see in the visual.
She does.
And at Shooters that night, we get our first glimpse at one of the more obscure gala committee installations. They transform the entire bar into a pictorial history of alcohol consumption in the United States. There are more than 70 individual bottle labels plus hand-blown glass decanters, pictures, and knickknacks, all inspired by events in U.S. history that were related to alcohol in one way or another from 1700 to the present. I'm going to put up a couple of pictures, but you cannot see all that effort on screen at all, which is a shame because that sounds pretty cool, but it's like
totally especially invisible. Not in the, you know, with transfer technology, like it just, if it aired now, we'd be able to... Marvel at it, but it's just going to be a little bit muzzy.
Well, we might if any of it got close to the camera, but it doesn't. Like, it's way in the back behind the character. It's like, it's behind the bar. It's not even like we see someone, Jake, pick up a bottle and, like, show it. You can't see it at all. But good for them, question mark. Anyway, Allison notes that Matt is acting weird. Jake says he's in a good mood, but Allison thinks it's more than that. They can't discuss it further because then Billy comes in sounding all pinched some more about not having been permitted to help Allison further with the packing and announcing that he asked for her moving day off so he could help her again. No one asked you to do this. Allison says that Jake and Matt are going to help her, and I think we all know Matt is going to be a lot more help given his current activities.
I'm not saying that's in my notes, but I'm not saying it's not.
But Billy continues refusing to take a hint. Clip 11.
Well, that'll go that much faster with the three of us.
All right. Why don't you be at my place around 8?
Okay. Can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. So don't say anything to Allison, but I'm throwing her a surprise moving away party. You know, before you do that, there's something that I need to tell you. Oh, we'll talk tomorrow then. Bye, Allison.
What was that all about?
Can you keep a secret?
What do you think I've been doing for the past 2 weeks?
It's been 2 weeks? Yikes. Is A, B... Why on earth didn't they rewrite this, especially after that scene? It's so much more to the side of he knows when he's fucking with them and doesn't want Jake to tell him because he wants to set him up.
Exactly. Over to the jail, where Amanda's once again hanging around the interview room as Peter meets with his lawyer, who thinks they just need to find another restaurant patron who remembers seeing Kimberly and Peter together that night. Peter starts sarcastically ranting about what's going to happen to him if such a person never appears, and Amanda says he's scaring her, and he's all, join the club, and then announces that he wants to take the stand himself. His lawyer says that given his recent actions, he's not a great witness in his own defense, but Peter insists. And the next day, Matt sees Taylor at Amanda's door again and decides it's his place to tell Taylor that Amanda's in court and why, and then Kyle is also there. He claims the moving van should be there any minute, which A, no, it shouldn't. It takes days to drive across the country. And B, they have not left L.A., so did poor Andre from the restaurant pack all their shit?
What? Maybe their cousin Danny packed them up? No.
It doesn't matter, because Taylor claims she suddenly has to go deal with an issue with the restaurant's liquor license right now. In court, Peter is getting questioned by his lawyer. Taylor's in the back, and before long, Amanda turns around and sees her and rolls her eyes. Peter thinks his server had blonde hair, but as his lawyer notes that the server who testified had brown hair, Kimberly starts getting flashes of the night in question. And then, clip 12.
I can explain it. I remember.
Objection.
Sustained. Dr. Shaw, please take your seat.
Yeah, Kimberly, come on, sit down.
No, there were two waiters.
Objection.
Peter was late. Arturo shift had ended.
If you do not sit down, I'll have
out my bill for the tea so that he
Your
can
Honor,
have his
I
tip.
Object again.
If the purpose of this hearing is to get at the truth, how can the prosecution possibly object?
The second waiter was blonde. He was very good looking. He might have even said he was an actor. He was a lousy waiter.
Your Honor, I request an immediate recess in order to find this second waiter.
The existence of a second waiter has not been testified to. The witness's outburst is not admissible.
I agree. However, her testimony won't be necessary if indeed an independent party does exist who can corroborate the defendant's alibi. Mr. Price, you have 24 hours to find your witness. This court stands in recess.
Please find this motherfucker because I'm so tired of this plot line. I can't.
I am too, but legal to all of that.
I mean, so legal.
Oh my God.
Witness. Okay.
And then Amanda turns back around, but Taylor has already slipped out. And then we're with the McBrides and their boxes in their new apartment. They've just wrapped up an inane debate about whether moving is men's work when there's a knock at the door. Obviously, it is Amanda wanting to know what the fuck Taylor was doing in court. Taylor claims she had some time to kill, but Amanda snaps that Taylor is a tenant, not a friend, and leaves. And Kyle comes back out on the end of this and would also like to know why Taylor was in court. Clip 13.
I was having a nooner with the judge.
It's not funny.
Maybe. Maybe I'm sorry about everything.
You know, why do I feel like I'm still being punished? Whatever happens, forgive and forget. A new beginning, clean slate.
I'm sorry. Let's drink to it. To us and a clean slate, okay?
Just tell us what her deal is, because there's absolutely no way at this point that it's going to be interesting enough. Like, he obviously cheated on her, fine. You don't have to bother with that part because nobody cares. But just tell her what the deal is with her. Tell us what the deal is with her and Peter, please. Yep. Like, stop dragging it out. You're not creating suspense.
No. Moving continues. The dudes are wrapping up at Allison's new place. Billy suggests dinner and Allison passes. Jake follows her lead. Billy reminds Allison to drop off her keys with Amanda the next night at 6 o'clock. Why would he be so specific on the time? JK, we know why. But Allison says she will and thanks him again. And then clip 14.
Jake, come.
Yeah, right.
Jake, I forgot to leave my time card at work. I think it's in my purse, so could you take that with you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, it may take me a minute to remember where I put it down.
Oh, that's okay. I can wait. Yeah, well, I'll keep you company.
You know, this is silly. I don't want to hang you guys up. I'll drop it off tomorrow morning.
You sure?
Yeah, I don't know what else to do.
Okay, I'll see you tomorrow then.
Bye.
He knows.
He knows.
Every scene, it's more he knowsy.
Yes. He looks, so you can see in the visual aids him squinting at them suspiciously. Like he's just playing this completely wrong. Anyway.
Yeah.
Then Peter's in his cell when a guard leads his lawyer in. They found the other waiter. He remembered Peter, and that's it. He gets to go right now. Peter is still mopey about them ripping his life apart without any consequences, which, like, go back to your medical practice. You already have a license. Just use that or legally change your name to Peter Burns if you're worried about using this other guy's shit. I know this sucked, but you're a lot better positioned to put the pieces of your life back together than most. But that said, having already watched episode 4, I can report the Peter Burns, Peter Howell thing in terms of identity theft does not come up again at all.
Yeah, is that just like a squatter's rights thing?
I don't know.
Using the name is 9/10 of the law. Like, I don't think that's how that works, but whatever the show thinks about how it works is way further away, so it's fine.
I guess. Anyway, Peter gets to leave immediately, and when Peter tells his lawyer not to call Amanda to come and get him, the lawyer offers to drive Peter home himself. Peter refuses that, too, because he wants to walk. His lawyer advises him to put this nightmare behind him and concentrate on his future with Amanda, even though we know that with his track record, Peter will probably get arrested for something else like 10 seconds after he walks outside.
Yeah, jaywalking, probably.
Totally.
Or he'll slip on a banana peel, break his pelvis, and that'll be it. That'll be a wrap on jaywags.
Yeah. At the hospital, Michael has barely had a chance to celebrate Peter's exoneration before Matt's attending, Dr. Shulman, asks Michael about Matt and his apparent speed addiction, and could Michael talk to him about it? Michael thinks that's outside his area of expertise. Also, he is not Matt's supervisor, but she notes that a chief of staff could handle that. And doesn't Michael still hope to get that job someday? Lady, don't you hope to get that job someday? Like, what? But whatever, it works. And she adds before leaving that if Matt is on drugs, she wants him expelled from the program. I feel like this is another ADA matter, but I guess we also know the show is not under the ADA's authority.
No.
But
also deputizing Michael to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Lady, when did you arrive here?
Mm. She's also not done. If a doctor at this hospital is supplying Matt, she wants that doctor arrested. And Michael's like, well, fuck. Cut to the courtyard at 6 p.m., clip 15.
Surprise!
Oh, I don't believe this.
Courtney Thorne Smith, a pro.
This is very...
I don't believe this is great. Oh, so good.
Very, very good bad acting there, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Billy brings Allison over to meet the McBrides for 1 second before she returns the keys to Amanda. who catches her up on the latest news with Peter, including that she has lost track of him since his release. But then he wanders in and Amanda rushes over to hug him and somehow doesn't feel the tractor beam that Taylor has Peter locked in. If Peter knows Taylor, he doesn't notice her, and he and Amanda walk straight past Taylor back up to Amanda's place. Kyle doesn't know Peter either, apparently, but did notice that Taylor acted like she knew him, which she denies. Enter Sydney and Samantha, the latter immediately homing in on one guy and asking Sydney about him. Sydney, clip 16.
Oh, that's just Billy.
Our queen and president, Sydney.
It's Billy.
Yeah.
Sydney warns Samantha that Billy is all about Allison, Miss 12 Step, but it's not up to Sydney to keep people from getting messy. Clip 17.
Billy, meet Samantha. This is Jane's new roommate. She thinks you're cute.
Hi. Welcome to the building. It's nice to meet you.
Hi.
Speaking of middle school behavior, elsewhere, Allison passes a note to Jake to meet her at her place in an hour. He has kind of covered it with his beer bottle when Billy comes over, but then, when Jake isn't paying attention, Matt moves the bottles and napkins, and when Jake returns to Shooters, he takes the wrong napkin, and the note is left for Billy to pick up and assume was for him. Catches Allison's eye across the deck and winks. Ugh, throw this man in the trash. Upstairs, Amanda tells Peter they can stay in, and he sure does not feel like spending time with anyone else. Amanda reminds him that this is their first night together as a married couple, and she thought it should be special. As long as she doesn't call lights out at 9, it will be, he says.
Oh.
He just wants to take a shower. Amanda follows Peter into the bedroom, saying she could use a shower too, but he pouts that he has nothing left. He still has her, she says. He knows she was expecting a big romantic evening. She's done more for him than anyone ever has, standing by him through all this, but he would understand if she wanted to walk away. Clip 18.
Now listen to me. I'm not the same man I was before all this happened. I don't know if I'm going to have a medical practice, and I'm not going to have any dough left after I pay my legal fees.
Don't you know by now that I love you? Not your practice, not your money, but you. Peter, the smartest thing I ever did in my life was marry you. So, you're stuck with me. For better or worse, till death do us part.
I love you both.
I mean, yeah. They're cute.
They're cute. They're cute.
They're cute.
And then poor dumb Billy is at Allison's door, trying the knob and letting himself in. No, dude. Second time this episode. I mean, at least this door was closed, but still. Fuck.
Oh, God.
Inside, he finds lit candles very unsafely sitting on cardboard boxes and around Allison's bed and flowers. And then he just appears at her bedroom curtain, and it is awkward. Clip 19.
You wouldn't have done all this for me unless you wanted to get back together, am I right?
What are you doing here?
I got your note. I guess the music and the candles. Guess it's not for me, huh? It's for Jake.
Yeah.
Finally, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Also, the smooth jazz, like, barf.
Yes.
Take the W, Billy.
Yeah. I have to think it was probably, like, Wicked Game or something originally, but anyway. This is when Jake enters. Yeah, a punch is thrown. The fight is really one-sided, and when Jake punches Billy in the gut, he shakes off Allison's attempt to help him. Billy does, rather. Clip 20.
Billy, come on. We're friends.
Yeah. Yeah, you're my friend. Let's go to hell.
You can't say we're friends after you've just been punching each other.
No. Also, It's Billy. Like, oh my God. Like, everybody just be as happy as we are that it's all out in the open. Ugh.
Yeah. Sigh. You moved in order to avoid this happening. And now it's happened and you're stuck in a new place. You went through a lot of hassle to avoid this exact thing happening. Good job, everybody. God.
Yep. Well done.
All right. Let's name our episode MVP. Amanda does everything right other than her hair.
Sydney actually did her hair right also for the most part and had a couple of great lines and got them out of trouble and bailed Jane out financially.
Yeah. Good call.
Yeah.
Least valuable player. I mean, leaving aside the dead rapist, fucking Billy. Just stop. Stop.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think Billy is legit, but I found the badness hilarious. Samantha's just attraction, moth-like attraction to the flame of stupid that is the Andrews sisters.
Yeah.
Girl.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to go Samantha.
That's fair.
Next time on Again With This, Billy is bitter, Michael has blue balls, Peter gets evicted, and Matt gets arrested. You'll probably want us arrested after looking at our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. Follow the links there to our very special 90210 book, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm antique brooch corpse tester Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Nooner with the Judge, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Oh, our producer? That's just David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh. What?